Okay. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. Before we have our quiet time, let's all get on the same page. If you're in the Sparkly Book, it's page 351, a new section entitled Time and Eternity. If you're in the second edition, it's page 304, entitled The End of Doubt. If you're in the first edition, it's page 283, The End of Doubt. If you're reading from the JCIM, it's page 147, Time and Eternity. And if you're reading from the CIMS edition, it's page 295, Time and Eternity. Okay, let's take a few moments to be quiet together. Okay. Again, good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. Time and eternity. And the end of doubt. Two different choices for a subheading here. But they really do go together. When you stop and think about it, doubt isn't really something any of you suffer from. It's something each of you practices. It isn't something you submit to, it's something you assert. And why do you do it? You do it to give you distance between reality and what you want. Reality and what you prefer to believe. Now, time and eternity are the two things which you shift from one to the other at the threshold of awakening, at the threshold of atonement, in the holy instant. And remember, we talked about the holy instant not really being a point in time, but rather, for lack of better words, a place in you where you yield and say yes to God. Now, obviously, if you are going to decide not to be an independent authorizer anymore and not to do your own best thinking and come to your own best judgments and abide entirely by them, and you're going to say yes to God, then you're going to have arrived at the point where you experience the end of doubt. Because you're going to stop, you're going to stop practicing it. You're going to abandon the position of authorizer. And in so many words, you're going to let God be in charge. Something that he has been forever. but not something you've been willing to yield to for a long time. I think a lot of you have found that it's not something you're as willing to embrace as you might have thought you were, because it costs too much. It costs you your position of authorizer. It costs you what you call independence, something which you take great pride in, something which you believe God gave you, and that therefore it is something to be proud of and to exercise well. Well, nevertheless, whether you know it or not, you do want to wake up. You do not like suffering. And so, sooner or later, you are each going to arrive at a point of having to make a decision to exchange time for eternity. To exchange the conscious practice of doubt that says, well, I'm not so sure about that. You say this, but what about that? I'm going to take some time to examine this, and I'm going to come to my own conclusion about it. Maybe I'll agree with you, but I will have come to my own conclusion about it. You see, all the time maintaining this autonomy and maintaining the pride of the authority of the autonomy. It's the practice of doubt that distances you from the experience of reality that confronts you and is the only thing that confronts you always. Now, in a way, the subject of time and eternity is timely, if you will, because time is on your mind these days. It's a new year. Not only is it a new year, it's a new political climate. And even though the new political climate centers in the United States, it is nevertheless felt as a new political climate globally. It's a year in which time could slip into eternity. It's a year in which doubt could give way to saying yes to God. In a way, it's a year in which most everyone will be required to shift, whether they want to or not, whether they want to hold on to the status quo or not. Miracles are change. Miracles cause yielding. Miracles result in things being made new. Not just around you, but in you. You saying yes to God, instead of maintaining an authoritative stance yourself, that is a significant change, a significant transformation. And as I said, it's one that most don't embrace willingly. But, as many of you are aware, there is an economic crisis. And it's not an economic crisis you're reading about in the newspaper about somewhere else. It's an economic crisis wherever you are. No matter where you are on the globe, as you're listening to my words. Why is this? It's because it really is one globe. It really is one world. It really is one economy. It really is one whatever you want to name it. And so one of the things that everyone is going to be faced with this year is the practice of your capacity to embrace others. Your capacity to embrace countries, peoples who have been your enemy, or whose enemy you have been. And you're going to have to find ways to work together. Why? Because working separately doesn't work. And it only has seemed to work fairly well as long as there are laws that keep each of you in your place. But harmony needs to come, because harmony is the law, and harmony is the result of what? Abandoning doubt. Well, I don't know about them. Well, you know how they are in Iran. Well, you know how the Jews and the Arabs are. There's never going to be peace. They're never, blah, blah, blah. You can go on and on. It must stop. It is going to stop. And it will either stop gently and harmoniously, or it will stop strenuously. Now, everyone is going to have to get off their arrogant high horse, where they look down on everyone else from their position of authority, or where this country looks down on all other countries from its position of authority, and where everyone is used or abused, if it is at all possible to do it, and make a profit from it. And what you know is best for you, truly best for you, you're going to have to be willing to extend to your brother, the ones who didn't like you, the ones who currently don't like you. Oh, so maybe the first release of doubt is going to be you saying, I'm not going to hold my perception of you against you anymore. And I'm going to be willing to pay attention to you as you, so that I might learn what you need, and so that I might learn that you're not any different from me, so that I can more willingly embrace you and cause you to see me as harmless, so that you might feel free to embrace me. Ah, this is called miracles. This is called changing. This is called being willing to be in a new way, being willing to have all things made new in you. The sky is falling, the sky is falling, Chicken Little says. The economy is falling, the economy is falling, say all of you. Horror of horrors, run, run. Save yourself. It's the end. Well, isn't that ridiculous? And you believe it. It's the end of what? A year from now, you're still going to be here. A year from now, the economy is still going to be here. Maybe it will work differently. Maybe the motivation behind it will be different. But it's not the end of anything except an old way of behaving, an old way of perceiving, an old way of insisting on being the determiner of the meaning of things all by yourselves instead of shutting up, becoming still, going within into the silence and saying, Father, what is the truth here? Or saying, Holy Spirit, that which is nothing more than my right mind, what is the truth here? I choose to yield to the truth. When there is great need, and when reconfiguration is occurring, and it looks like all that has meaning is crumbling, it's a time for vision. Oh, you say, Obama has the vision, you say. Someone else has the vision. Well, I'll tell you something. Everyone will have the vision if they don't, like Chicken Little, run around like crazy because the sky is falling, the sky is falling. If reconfiguration is occurring, and I guarantee you it is, then opportunity abounds. Opportunity is the only thing in front of you. But you're going to have to stifle your free-form reactions and your crepe hanging. And you're going to have to say, wow, well, things are reconfiguring because the way it has worked no longer works. That means something new is going to work. What is it? What is the opportunity here? And this is important. What is the opportunity here that all of us are presented with to upgrade the form of our living so that everyone is blessed because gift is what is behind every action rather than self-preservation, rather than making a profit at the expense of someone else? What do I need to do? What do all of us need to do that causes everyone to feel their brotherhood? That causes everyone to feel togetherness and being loved? Because I'll tell you, that's what inspires miracles. That's what inspires the willingness to let go and let God. Now, you just don't have the time to sit around and listen to the news and grouse about it. You don't have time to grouse about anything because there's too much opportunity here. You might say this is a year of grand opportunity for dynamic, transformational change that could only be described as progress. But you're going to have to be willing to embrace it by looking for it. instead of enjoying the opportunity to rail at the gods and to curse the earth and each other, I promise you, it is a year in which everything we have been talking about will be able to be put to good use. It's a time to look at your brother and not say, he's the reason I'm in this position. Or to look at your corporations and say, they're the reason we're in this position. You must abandon blame and fault finding. You must be willing to do the two-step, to step back and say, in spite of the way it appears, in spite of the behavior that appears to have gone on, what is the truth here? What is the truth about my brother? I need to know the truth, and I'm going to take the time to find out what the truth is about my brother that allows me to lay down my distress and frustration with him, and instead allows me to embrace him with compassion and love and support. Because he has to be the son or daughter of God as much as I am, and has to be as deserving of blessing as I am, no matter what has, quote, gone wrong, unquote. Now, let's go into the book. The atonement is in time, but not for time. Interestingly enough, time is mostly a description of the act of having to wait for your good. The atonement is in time. It seems to take place in what you call time. It appears to be a process of growth that takes time in you, and so on. So the atonement is in time, but not for time. The atonement is for eternity. Again, the atonement is in time, but not for time. Being in you, it is eternal. What holds remembrance of God cannot be bound by time. No more are you. That better be the meaning you give to yourself as you move into this new year. What holds remembrance of God cannot be bound by time. The Holy Spirit in you, that which is nothing more than your right mind, holds remembrance of God. And its function is to get your attention so that you will yield back into your right mind and abandon this attempt to be an independent authority on your own. What holds remembrance of God cannot be bound by time. No more are you. So as you move into this new year, you're not bound by time. You're not bound by what has happened in the past, the recent times. You simply aren't. If you believe that you are, you are going to approach each day with a commitment to loss and a commitment to grousing about it and bitching about it and cursing about it. But you aren't bound. And you can be the ones who are alert for the opportunities that this transformation will bring and that your recognition of will help bring into play. You have a part to play. Continuing, for unless God is bound, you cannot be. It's so practical to identify with God rather than to try to identify with yourself as yourself by yourself. Unless God is bound, you cannot be. If God is not bound, you are not bound. An instant offered to the Holy Spirit is offered to God on your behalf. Okay, is that a moment of time, an instant offered? It could seem to be. But really, the instant, again, is that place in you where you say yes to God, the act of willingness. So, an instant, an act of willingness, offered to the Holy Spirit, is offered to God on your behalf by the Holy Spirit. Why? Because the Holy Spirit bears witness to the truth about you. The Holy Spirit bears witness, true witness, about you to God. And when you finally let the Holy Spirit be restored to you as your right mind, your every act relative to anything else will be that of witnessing to anything else. To God, bearing witness of everything to God. Very important and very simple. An instant offered to the Holy Spirit is offered to God on your behalf, and in that instant, you will awaken gently in Him. Well, that tells you also what happens when you bear witness to your brother, to God. Bear true witness to your brother, to God. In that instant, he will awaken gently in God. In the blessed instant, you will let go all your past learning. Well, learning is just a memorized thoughts, memorized ideas, memorized strings of words that you've given meaning to. It's been called thinking. But in that moment, you abandon all of the thinking. It seems that it was the most important thing in the world to you, but it has been the act of doubt that you've brought into play. Oh, well, I want to think this through myself, and I will come to my own conclusion, you see. When you're willing to say, wait a minute, I've been thinking all my life. I've been doing as much of it as I possibly could, and I'm not awake, and I'm still suffering. And I'm still seeing a divided, conflicted world. And even though that seems to be the norm, it doesn't feel good. Why not? It doesn't feel good because something in me says it isn't normal. That in me which says it isn't normal is that in me which is the presence of God. That in me which is divine about me, the Holy Spirit. So, I'm going to dare to engage in the holy instant, the act of willingness to say yes to God and let God inform me what the truth of this or that or the other thing is, so that I may bear witness truly to my brother or to my world. In the blessed instant, you will let go all your past learning, and the Holy Spirit will quickly offer you the whole lesson of peace. Not give it to you piecemeal. At the present time, you seem to get it piecemeal because you only listen for a little bit at a time. And you do hear a little bit at a time, and you do experience enlightenment. But when you let go all of your past learning, by even momentarily not valuing your thinking, the Holy Spirit, that which is nothing more than your right mind, will quickly offer you the whole lesson of peace. What can take time when all the obstacles to learning it have been removed? And what are all the obstacles to learning it? All of your thoughts, all of your cherished ideas, all of your pet theories, all the definitions you've joined together in making up so as to govern yourself in relative harmony, so that you don't kill each other, which of course you would do because it's your nature to do it, or so the saying goes, so the theory goes. But when all the obstacles to learning have been removed, when all of the thoughts and ideas and definitions, when you have withdrawn investment in them, the Holy Spirit fills you with the whole experience of truth. Truth is so far beyond time that all of it happens at once. Which simply means that truth presences itself. Truth presents itself in its entirety. Forever. And forever new. Truth is so far beyond time that all of it happens at once. For as it was created one, so its oneness, or singularity, depends not on time at all. In fact, it not only doesn't depend on time, it is the non-existence of time. And so when you let yourself into the experience of it, time, in other words, waiting for your good, will disappear. Time, and all the means you have developed to bring your good into your experience, will disappear. The experience of truth is the experience of having all of creation present with you without process to it, without having to wait for it, without it having to develop or grow, you see. In its entirety, it presents itself forever. So, nice words. But let them relate to the fact that you're having a hard time buying a car because nobody will loan you money, because the banks are afraid, and on and on and on. And what about you may lose your job because your job provides materials or parts for another project, but nobody has the money to buy that end product, and so nobody's ordering the parts you make, and on and on and on. Truth is whole. Truth presents itself in its entirety. Reality is a movement of the entirety of itself. Therefore, it's the movement of the entirety of you. And that means that no matter how difficult it is for you to conceive of having all of your good under the current economic and world conditions, it's still your birthright to be experiencing, and all of it is still present for you to embrace with your mind so that it can register with you, so that you let it in instead of denying it by your confidence that it isn't there and it won't be there. Unless God is bound, you cannot be. Okay, again, you could say, nice idea. But if God is not bound and you cannot be bound, then you have an entirely new way to enter into this year than you probably entered it on New Year's Day. A way to enter this year without pessimism. And something more than optimism. Why, you might just dare to expect a miracle. You might just expect to have something plop into your lap, totally unanticipated and unexpected, that meets the need so specifically that you know there could be no fluke to it, no chance to it, but rather that it is a manifestation of wholeness that is so specific. That you recognize an order to the miracle that is so complex, so infinite, you might say, that you know you couldn't have thought it up yourself. You couldn't have imagined it yourself. Because I'll promise you something. Miracles, the experience of reality, is not the result of imagination. And it's not the result of thinking. And it's not the result of skill you personally have as an independent authority. It's the manifestation of the way things work. Because of what God is, because of what reality is. Now, enter into the 4th of January with a new expectation. With a new context, if you will. You want to experience joy.
Oh, well, how can I experience joy? They're foreclosing on my house. I lost my job. And the list goes on and on. Poor me.
No, silly you. Because you're saying this as you sit at the threshold of opportunity to see or experience the vision of how it can work the new way, the way that blesses you and everyone and provides you with a gift to give that helps others to see it. And thank God you lost your job and you won't be going back to that job again because the gift you have to give
actually meet a need where the job you had met wants, met greed, met things that didn't really matter, but you got a good paycheck. Hey, you want to experience joy. And joy is on the table this year. It's on the table every year. But this year, you better be willing to take hold of it vigorously, definitely, and stop whining. About how things aren't the way they used to be. Unless God is bound, you cannot be. God is not bound, therefore you aren't. This is the good news. And this is the context in which to be the rest of today and tomorrow and the next day. Do not be concerned with time. And another way of putting that would be, do not be concerned about the effects of time. Oh, well, I'm not as young as I used to be, you know, and time has passed, and this has happened, and that. And also, you know, because time passes, we can expect things to happen. Do not be concerned with time. Stop using your mind this way. Do not be concerned with time, and fear not the instant of holiness, which will remove all fear. Do not fear the instant of holiness. You say, well, why would I fear the instant of holiness? That's what I'm after. Well, you know what you might find, like Paul has, especially in the weeks since our last get-together, that the closer you get to the requirement to abandon thinking, the more you think. The more the mind chatters. And, in fact, it chatters so relentlessly and so rapidly that you begin to see nonsense in it. It's like the time has come to shut up. The time has come to become still. Why? So that in the stillness, the voice for truth can register with you. Of course, when it registers with you, the voice you thought was yours will, of course, become meaningless in comparison, won't it? And, oh, now you know what's so fearful about the instant of holiness. The voice you thought was yours is going to be rendered meaningless. Ooh. Let's not have too much of that. A little bit here and there, maybe. Impress the folks with it. But all the time? Abandon thinking all the time? No. And again, the closer you get to the demand to be still, the more insistent one's ego becomes to speak up. And so it requires you, as it's requiring Paul, to take hold I don't want to say to assert a little authority, but to exercise a little self-discipline and silence the mind on purpose and not value the right to think, and express the thoughts and build up one's presence by the expression of those thoughts. Let the silence come.
and squelch the need to assert your mind through thinking. Do not be concerned with time, and fear not the instant of holiness, which will remove all fear. For the instant of peace is eternal, because it is wholly without fear. Of course, the ego says, well, of course it's without fear because he's gone insane. He's not thinking and there's no fear. Not because there really is no reason for fear, but because he's gone off the deep end. He's listened to all of this spiritual bullshit and he's taken it to heart. And of course, he's not going to experience fear because he's gone insane. That's what the ego says. And as it says to you, don't you dare do that. Don't you dare become silent. Don't you dare become willing to let something other than your voice speak. Take advice. Don't you do it. Don't you dare participate with or be involved with or be in partnership with or relate to anyone else. Don't you dare do that. The instant of peace is eternal because it is wholly without fear. That's because it's peace, not because insanity has taken over. Peace is the absence of fear, and therefore the absence of a felt need for self-defense. Peace is the experience of safety. Real peace, yielded into completely, is an experience of complete safety. A safety so complete that it can only be described as invulnerability. And you thought invulnerability always had something to do with supreme power, which once in place meant you were invulnerable. No. Invulnerability comes from and is inseparable from the experience of true peace, which is forever present with you in you, to access any time you wish. And I am encouraging you to wish it more often than you do, and to wish it with diligence or self-discipline. Why? Because with the practice of self-discipline, it's going to make this next year significantly different for you than the forecasts say. It will come. What? The instant of peace. It will come. It will come. Being the lesson God gives you through the teacher he has appointed to translate time into eternity, or to move you over the threshold from the assertive practice of doubt to the yielding willfulness to yield to God. The teacher he has appointed to translate time into eternity is what? The integrity of it is so incredibly perfect and beautiful. It's nothing more than your right mind. It's the Holy Spirit. It's that which, when you yield to it, unavoidably brings you back into wholeness. Integrity, integration, the integration of you. Blessed is God's teacher
whose joy it is to teach God's holy Son His holiness. His joy is not contained in time. His teaching is for you because His joy is yours. Remember, we were talking about joy? Joy stands present with you, being presented to you by that which is nothing more than your right mind, in other words, your sanity. And today, on the 3rd of July, it's standing with it for you. And tomorrow on the 4th, I'm sorry, the 3rd of January, and tomorrow on the 4th of January, it will be presenting it to you. And on the 5th and the 6th, and on and on and on. How many days are you going to wait to receive it? To conceive of the possibility that it could register with you without any further process? You know, a subheading in a book, Time and Eternity, and the translation of time into eternity. Hey, that has to do with January 3rd, 2009, and January 4th, 2009, and you, and you, and you, here, today, with atonement just a little willingness away from what you're experiencing right now, which is simply calling for diligence, self-discipline, so that you stop running around like Chicken Little, convinced that the sky is falling, that something is happening that isn't happening. Through Him, the Holy Spirit, you stand before God's altar, where He gently translates hell into heaven. For it is only in heaven that God would have you be. If it is only heaven where God would have you be, then I promise you that's where you are. Because you have not the capacity to create an alternative, even though you have fooled yourself into believing that you do and you have. Now, I wish for all of you a Happy New Year. And I mean to really have a new year, not a groundhog year, where every year is a repeat of the previous. Happy New Year. Approach this year with your capacity to look at it with vision that takes you and everyone else beyond what no longer works. That is your capacity. That's your function. Let 2009 be the year you glorify God. Okay. I look forward to being with you next time. And I love you all.